And when you visit the website at the moment, you can click two buttons. You can click live outdoor walks. We're back up on our hind legs again, leading walking tours. But there's also a complete program of virtual tours to have a look at. Now, on Thursday, every Thursday, I'm going to be leading a music-themed virtual tour right here. But if you click the virtual tours button, there's all sorts of stuff there, as you know. Sherlock Holmes, the parks of London, Kensington, all sorts. So, yeah, you know the drill. Come and see us on a virtual tour. This one tonight, what are we up to? Well, this is Musical Kensington, a virtual tour. It's the second of the Musical Neighbourhood tours. The first one was Covent Garden. And the idea is to try and open up the neighbourhoods of London so we can learn a little bit about the areas, the districts, the neighbourhoods through our music and musicians. So we've been in Covent Garden. We're going to be in Kensington tonight. A couple of weeks' time, we're looking for Marylebone. So that's the idea behind these musical neighbourhood tours. Musical Kensington this evening. Let's fly in. Let's have a look. Some of you will recognise this from David's Kensington tour. We're hovering over Trafalgar Square. We're heading west towards Kensington. We're going out to the country. In the 1600s, Kensington was the countryside, and it becomes a fashionable area when the court moves here in the shape of William III. Very lush, very green. Right in the middle of the shot there, you'll see the Albert Memorial. We'll talk about him, Prince Albert. And off to the left there, the Royal Albert Hall. We'll talk about that too. And we'll discuss how Kensington becomes musical. We'll start with this woman. This is Queen Victoria. Queen Victoria, a keen music fan and pianist. Her husband, Prince Albert, looms large in our story. Himself a composer. He composed a number of songs. Now, I'm going to follow up the tour as usual with a little email, and that email will have a playlist of the music we've discussed tonight. So we'll have a couple of Prince Albert's tunes on that playlist for you. She played the piano, Queen Victoria, and she liked to be entertained. In fact, it's Queen Victoria that institutes the Royal Command performance in this country, a variety show. On command of the royal family, entertainers get together and entertain the nation these days on television, very often at the London Palladium. She brings in that practice. She would command entertainers such as Buffalo Bill Cody to come and entertain her family. There's been a theatre command performance in this country since the time of Charles II. There's been a movie command performance since the time of George VI in the 1940s. But the variety command performance is brought in by Queen Victoria because she liked music and she played the piano. Let's have a look and indeed a listen to her piano, not to her playing the piano, but to her instrument. Here it is here, playing at the BBC Proms a couple of years ago. Queen Victoria's piano. Here we go. Piano there. Now, Queen Victoria's piano was the subject of a news story last Christmas, in fact. Here's her Madge making her annual Christmas broadcast last year from Sandringham. And in the background here, you can see the big gold piano there, the big gold piano. Now, in some quarters, this was seen as something of an outrage. We're in the middle of austerity and the Queen's got a big gold piano and we're not allowed to play it, you know. There was controversy in some quarters. And indeed, amid the controversy, there emerged a rumour, an extraordinary rumour, that this piano was only a recent arrival in the Queen's house, that this piano had been looted by the British Army from Saddam Hussein's palace and presented to Her Majesty as the spoils of war. God knows where this story came from. It's a lurid idea. That the Queen would have Saddam Hussein's piano as some sort of trophy. the origin of the piano is from the 1850s, gold leaf piano, purchased by Queen Victoria. She loved to play the piano. And she thought music in a public place a good thing as well. And so she ordered that there be a bandstand erected in Kensington Gardens so that we could have music in public. Here's that very bandstand, photographed this very day. I was doing the Kensington tour this afternoon. And she had the bandstand erected in Kensington Gardens in the 1850s with a view to having concerts for the general public in Kensington. Nice idea. Lovely. Music for the people? No, said John Bird Sumner, the Archbishop of Canterbury. Who can say no to Queen Victoria? Well, this fella here, John Bird Sumner, he said, we shan't have music in public. It will lead to no good. So he put the kibosh on the whole thing. He looks back to the 18th century when we had music in public places in the pleasure gardens, in places such as Vauxhall and Marylebone. Wild places. Here's a scene, as imagined by Cruikshank, the cartoonist, of the pleasure gardens. They had music, they had dancing. You know where dancing leads. Yeah, big trouble. They had commercial dating. They had all sorts of sordid activities and fighting. Can you see this fellow here with his dukes up? And he's just knocked this chap down. So they were wild places, the pleasure gardens. And the Archbishop of Canterbury said, no, it's a bad idea to have a bandstand in Kensington Gardens. We shan't have public concerts. I like to think that maybe he was looking forward as well, 100 years, to music in the royal parks. If he thought the pleasure gardens were scandalous, well, how about this lot? This is 1969 when the Rolling Stones played their free concert in Hyde Park. So maybe the Archbishop of Canterbury saw the shape of things to come. In this photograph here, I'm particularly fond of this malevolent looking character here. Look at him. There's not much peace and love going on there, is there? It looks like a hard case. So, no music in Kensington Gardens, said the Archbishop of Canterbury. So how does Kensington become musical? Well, we'll find out in our overture. As you know, the overture contains the most important tunes, so you can familiarise yourself with them. And so in our overture, we're going to discuss the most important event in the history of musical Kensington, the Great Exhibition. 1851, here we are hovering over London in the mid-19th century. We're heading in this direction, so let's zoom in over Hyde Park and Kensington Gardens. Let's drop our pin there. Pin in the map. And we're looking to visit this location here. It's 1851. And this little pink block here is the site of the Great Exhibition of 1851. This is where it took place, in the famous Crystal Palace. Here's the picture here. An illustration of Joseph Paxton's colossal structure. Let's do the numbers in Kensington Gardens. 1851, that's the year, of course, but the original dimensions of the design, it was designed to be 1,851 feet long. Nice bit of poetry there, isn't it? Now, what with one thing and another, it ended up being 1,848 feet when it was actually built. But the original design was 1851, in 1851. It's 128 feet tall, and it occupies a 90-acre site. Now, bear in mind at this point, we're living in Whitechapel in East London, 15 to a room. 15 to a room. So the opulence here is extraordinary. And here are the opulent people doing the Pazzacciata in the park. Can you see the huge crowds milling around at the door of the Great Exhibition, Joseph Paxton's colossal structure? Prince Albert, one of the great movers and shakers behind the success of the Great Exhibition, the consort of Queen Victoria. Here he is in portrait form. The portrait is by Franz Winterhalter and can be seen at the National Portrait Gallery. I'm very fond of this portrait. I know I shouldn't put my own opinions in here, but I think this is one of my favourite portraits of anyone, anywhere. There's a lot to enjoy in this portrait. First of all, as a middle-aged man, I think there's a lot to empathise with. Can you see what Prince Albert's doing here? He's clearly holding it in, isn't he? He's clearly pulling his tummy in there. I can empathise, Albert. The scene in the room there, it looks like a teenager's bedroom, doesn't it? What a mess. Everything's lying all over the bed here. These are all his heraldic honours. He's Order of the Bath, his robes. Here's his hat. Can you see his hat in this corner of the picture here? It's just been thrown aside, like a teenager, you know? Let's have a look. There's the hat there. It's even lying on its side. It really has been thrown aside. It's just been cast to one side. What a mess. He doesn't care for uniforms. He doesn't care for badges and crests and, you know, honours. He wants to be remembered as a man of action. I think that's what this picture says. He's a man with big plans. And here, right here, and here, these are the actual big plans. The big plans for the festival that was the Great Exhibition. He brought investment to the Great Exhibition and ensured its success. Very energetic character, Prince Albert of Saxe-Coburg, the consort of Queen Victoria. So he's the main character behind the success. He's not the inventor or the founder of the Great Exhibition, but his energy brings great success and great investment to the project. His portrait can be seen at the NPG, the National Portrait Gallery. I don't wish to suggest that the Great Exhibition was in any way a music festival. Far from it. It was a trade fair. It was a trade fair. That's what the Great Exhibition was. Inventions from all corners of the world, such as this. This is the four-feeder printer from the Illustrated London News. Can you see this contraption here? We've got one, two, three, four fellas feeding paper into this printing machine. So we're on the way to mass production in print technology. That was on display at the Great Exhibition. New technology in lenses, cameras and telescopes, all on display at the Great Exhibition. Guns. Mr. Colt was here displaying his wares. So it's a trade fair. All sorts of inventions. It's all about bigger, faster, longer, wider, higher, taller, better, more. The driving zeal of the Victorian age. Improvement on all fronts. Science, medicine, of course, but inventions, technology, architecture. Every field the Victorians believed was ripe for betterment. So it's emblematic of the Victorian era. Here's the cover of the catalogue from the Crystal Palace. And here's the, look at the girth of these books. Girthy books these are. These are the catalogues listing everything that was on display. So tens of thousands of exhibits.